Upgrade your comfort to Emirates Premium Economy the next time you fly from Dallas. Sink into soft leather seats with raised legrests and adjustable headrests. Elevate your dinner plans with delicious regional dining, all served with complimentary premium drinks. Enjoy endless entertainment with up to 6,500 channels, including live sports. There's no other premium economy like it. Fly Emirates. Fly better.
The Postal Service has entered new turmoil with the departure of Postmaster Louis DeJoy. It's midway through a controversial reform plan, but it continues to lose billions of dollars yearly. My next guest says it's time to seriously consider privatizing USPS. He's an economist and vice president for research at the Cato Institute, Jeffrey Miron. Dr. Miron, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And I guess the fundamental question is, private or public, can something private still guarantee under the Constitution, I believe, that every address could be serviced?
So I guess I'm not sure. I think the Constitution requires service to every address. I think the Constitution certainly does authorize the federal government to run a postal service, but it would seem unlikely it would insist on paying no attention to cost. The cost of serving every address are high because some people live far away. There's not much population density. So could we, that aside, the constitutional issue aside, could we accomplish what you suggested? They're not exactly the way we do it now, but in reasonable ways. For example, there could be delivery once a week to rural addresses. Okay, that would reduce the cost and make it much more viable. Or some countries have a truck that drives into small towns on a certain schedule once a week, and all the customers come and pick up their mail. So that's much lower cost than trying to deliver to every address every single day. Okay? And certainly private services would provide this if they're allowed to set their prices. Okay, the crucial question is not just can you deliver everywhere, but can you do so at a profitable price? I don't want to guarantee that every place would get served, okay? But that sort of life, if we're going to have use economic common sense and take into account the cost versus the benefits of providing any particular service.
Because there are still that few people that want to get that Christmas card to grandma who might live in rural South Dakota at the end of a long line. And right now, you know, a mail truck goes there every day. So you're saying a mail truck could go there weekly, or grandma could get into town once a week and there's a collection of mailboxes. I mean, that's something the Postal Service itself has been pushing, at least in apartments and so forth, a single mail center. That's what you're envisioning.
That's one set of possibilities. Another possibility, of course, is that a lot more people, and this is already happening, are sending their Christmas cards via email. Okay, so then you don't have to get a truck there at all. And it's true that some people in very rural areas don't necessarily have broadband access, but that's also changing. And the incentives for people to pay for that would change, okay, if the mail system was no longer guaranteeing daily delivery to every single address. So private companies will supply anything for which there is enough demand to be able to cover the cost. That might mean that people in rural areas do have to pay more to get service than people in urban areas, but that's totally appropriate if we're going to focus on the efficient utilization of resources.
Because right now, the Postal Service, even though they say we're not a government agency, and they've been saying that for 50 years, but I said, well, if you're not a government agency, why do you have to get almost congressional approval or your board of governors or your rate setting commission? You've got all these naysayers. If you want to charge 5 cents more for a stamp, the pricing freedom would be the essential part of privatization.
Pricing freedom would be a crucial part. There are all sorts of other rules and regulations that apply to the post office right now. Some of them are beneficial, certain taxes they don't have to pay and things like that, but others that require them to provide lower rates for nonprofits. So you get a lot of stuff that is not covering its cost because of the mandate that's imposed on the U.S. Postal Service. So a different way to think about it is that the crucial issue is not necessarily whether it's private or public, but what rules it's subject to. And right now, all these rules are making it harder for it to compete. So it's partially understandable why they're losing a lot of money and need these big infusions from the taxpayer. But we could address that either by fully privatizing or by scaling back a lot of those rules.
We're speaking with Dr. Jeffrey Miron, Vice President for Research at the Cato Institute. And how would a privatized structure work? Other nations have privatized or partially privatized their postal services, just as they have air traffic control. That's another issue one of these days. But what would it look like? Would it be totally UPS, FedEx, a bunch of contracts, or would some sort of nonprofit entity be set up?
So there's probably a range of things that might emerge. I think the most obvious is the UPS, FedEx, DHL model. And part of repealing all these rules and special protections for U.S. Postal Service is to allow the current private carriers to do things like delivering first-class mail to come and use your mailbox and things like that, which they're not currently allowed to do under the existing regulation. So they would expand their services. And relatedly, the amount of mail that it makes sense to be sent these days is just getting smaller and smaller because more and more stuff is being done electronically. Packages, if you want to need a new VCR, well, yes, that has to be delivered somehow. But of course, people are using VCRs less and less because more and more stuff is just streaming over the airwaves. So there are multiple models. And part of the beauty of capitalism is we don't necessarily know what those models will be ex ante, but the market will figure it out in response to the demand from the customers.
And should it be privatized, what would the oversight structure look like? Because it is, as we established, at least partially a constitutional requirement to have a postal service, which then makes it incumbent on the government to oversee it.
I mean, in my dream world, in libertarian land, there wouldn't be any of this oversight because we would let supply and demand determine what was provided and what was not. But you certainly could have an oversight that limited certain behaviors or tried to make sure there was some provision to small rural towns in the form of a truck that comes once a week or other mechanisms. But that's, to me, second order compared to getting rid of all the impediments that make it hard for the Postal Service to compete. And whether it survives when the dust settles, I personally wouldn't care about. If it turns out and some nonprofit version with fewer rules can successfully compete, okay, fine. But if it can't, that's because the purely private services have been able to supply the demand that exists.
And what about the delivery of crucial items that come by mail now? Fewer and fewer people go to drugstores. And as the big drug networks have taken over, everybody gets their pills in the mail. And what if you can't wait a week for the pills? Then you have a national health issue.
But there's no reason why a CVS or a Walgreens or whatever won't contract with United Parcel Service or DHL or whatever, or set up their own delivery service because there would be enough demand for them to sustain having a bunch of trucks, just the way there are now private delivery organized and run by grocery store chains to deliver groceries to people's houses. You go online or you call them and you order whatever you want, and it shows up a few hours later. And indeed, I'm pretty sure that exists already. You're right that at the moment, I think my local CVS is using USPS, the U.S. Postal Service, but there's no reason they couldn't use DHL, et cetera, as long as the rules that limit DHL's ability to deliver to my mailbox were repealed.
Right. So then, therefore, DHL, somehow they'd have to figure out those distant rural people. I keep coming back to that because they are Americans and they have an address that's legitimate and they have legitimate needs. Somehow that has to be serviced, and you wouldn't want a delivery to be $1,000 for a bunch of, you know, statin pills.
It seems there will be a few very, very special cases where someone lives, you know, 500 miles into the wilderness in the middle of Alaska, where maybe the marginal cost of getting a delivery to them is $1,000. But it doesn't make sense to set up a whole system governed by these few extreme cases. Okay, for most of rural America, they're pretty close to urban America, and so they might face higher costs. But of course, people who live in these rural areas also get some benefits. They've made it a choice to stay there as opposed to moving to cities. So to an economist, it makes sense to have price be part of what determines how beneficial or not it is to live in a rural area.
And it could prompt real adoption of drone technology, which is a cheap way of getting stuff around.
Excellent point. I should have thought of that. Yes. Assuming we can sort of solve the issues about air rights, who owns the air above my house or above the street or whatever. Yes, drone technology could address a lot of this quite effectively.
Dr. Jeffrey Miron is Vice President for Research at the Cato Institute. Thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And we'll post this interview along with a link to his essay on USPS at federalnewsnetwork.com/Federal Drive. Hear the Federal Drive on demand. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Still to come, a vague Pentagon memo has some contractors on edge.